Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
That whole movie kind of sucked, but
yeah.
Exactly.
That just
that doesn't help.
We could have a whole other podcast. Yeah, we could. Just we could have good and bad.
Yeah, we'll record a second like a B, we'll do like a B side of this
right.
one, just bashing Suicide Squad after that.
Of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hi, Adam.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm cold, but that's just our office, not
that's
like
our office.
Outside world.
Yeah.
As we mentioned before, they're doing expansions. So there's basically gaps in our office right now and like in the walls where they're expanding stuff. So lots of breezes.
Pretty much.
It's like crosswinds in our office all the time. I'm the one who has to talk about the episode, huh?
You do.
Yeah, okay. I can do that. So we've never done this before, but I don't know that a ton of people know. Overdrive offers a lot of comic books, digitally, of course, but we have a ton of them, a lot of DC Comics and all sorts of stuff. So I sat down with three different people, two of them have been on the
it's
show
too early.
Before. I know. I'm sorry.
For grammar.
Quentin and Jim have been on the show before. And then Kenny had never been on before. But what Kenny does here, and he talks a little bit about it in the actual intro when I'm talking to them, he basically handles all of our comic book stuff that comes in. And he is like a compendium of knowledge when it comes to the comic books. So went through with the three of them a whole bunch of different comics that they recommend. And it was just a really fun conversation. And everything that they discuss is available through Overdrive. So if you have never read comics before, I would recommend just going in and finding some of the ones they talk about, because it's a nice kind of gateway to getting mm-hmm. into comics. But yeah, it's a big world. I've always been intimidated by like the world of comics. I love comic books. I'm kind of on like the fringe, but like getting into it feels intimidating from like a diving in. But it's really not. It's just beautifully drawn stories that yeah people would really like.
I've definitely read graphic novels and comic books before, but not all the time. I mean
mm-hmm.
yeah,
well, they're just nice. Like a perfect example is one of the books that Kenny talks about is Kingdom Come. It's like a one-off very famous comic book from DC. It's the Justice League characters, but there's a whole we talk about in the show, but he had all the physical comics with him here. We got to like a third of the comics that they all brought. But when he had it, he just gave it to me. And he's like, hey, if you want to read it over the weekend, go for it. Because the art on it is like jaw-droppingly beautiful. They're all like paintings in there. So I took it home and I read it in like an hour and a half.
Right.
Like that's the cool thing about graphic novels and comics is it's almost like a palate cleanser. Like I was in between fantasy novels and I was like, I just want something short really quickly. So it was great. It was a lot of fun. So whether you're a comic book fan or not, I think people will like this.
Yeah, I like what I like about graphic novels, and I think a lot of librarians would agree, is that it's there's a lot of YA ones that are good for reluctant readers, someone who is maybe intimidated by reading a full book.
Mm-hmm.
You still get that experience with graphic novels, and there's some really good ones out there.
Yeah, and someone else in the past who had been on here talked about the fact that because there's so many drawings and you know, images, illustrations and things in the actual comics and graphic novels, it helps with people who are struggling readers with kind of like word association. Like if they say a word they don't understand, they can see the image and see what it's depicting. So
yep.
It's good stuff. If people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds, and they can email us directly at ProfessionalBookNerds@Overdrive.com.
Yeah, and I'd really like it if people did reach out to us about this particular episode. The reason being, we've never talked about comics before, and as I mentioned, we got through like a third of what they brought. So we have so many more recommendations we could offer. So shoot us an email, send us a tweet, let us know what you thought, because I want to know if you would like to hear more of these, because we certainly would like to talk about them more. So anything else you can think of people need to know about for this?
I don't think so.
Awesome. Well, I hope you guys enjoy this comic book edition of the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hey, everyone. It's Adam, and I'm really excited about this episode. We've got three gentlemen with me today that are all also Team Overdrive people. Two of them have been on before, one of them have not. So I will let you guys all say hi one at a time so people can get a feel for your voice. So first we'll go with our newbie, Kenny. How you doing today?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. And for people who are listening in, just we're going to talk about comics today. So just for people who are listening in, what do you do at Overdrive? Because you're kind of like the comic guru here.
So I work in the content services department. Essentially, we're the people who deal with the operations. We work with the operations teams of several suppliers. And one of my specialities here is that I work with all of the comic suppliers that come in. We're working with DC and we're trying to get Marvel, mm-hmm. Image Comics, stuff like that.
Yeah. So anything that you would ever have borrowed through Overdrive that's a comic, Kenny has probably ingested from the publisher somewhere.
Yeah, it's either me or one of my coworkers.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. And then next we have Quinn, who's been on several times, but I'll let you say hello.
Hello. Go ahead. Sorry.
Quinn, can you do me a favor and talk a little bit closer to the microphone for me?
I can do that.
Perfect. All right. And just as a reminder for people, what do you do here at Overdrive?
I'm a product owner here, so I kind of help run products. It's kind of hard to explain, but kind of responsible from them from beginning to end. So most of our audience is probably familiar with Overdrive Help. That's yes. One of my products. I also work on the LexisNexis platform. And if you know what LexisNexis is, you might already know what that is.
Yeah. I don't know how many lawyers we have that are getting book recommendations from us, but it's possible.
It's possible.
Yeah. All right. And then last but not least, we have Jim, who's also been on several times. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Adam.
Do you want to remind people what you do here as well?
Yeah, sure. I'm an account specialist with the Library Partner Services team. I basically run all the Canadian accounts that we have.
Yes, you do.
All right.
And before I started recording, I told all the guys in the room here, but I'm just for everyone listening, we're going to talk about comics today. And yes, we are very aware that both women and men read comics. The way that this happened is Jill and I reached out to all of our coworkers and said, hey, who wants to be on the podcast and what types of genres do you want to talk about? And three people who said comics were all male. So that's why we're not doing like a sexist thing here. It just happened to be all three people. So first question I've got for you guys, and I'll start with Kenny. Before we kind of jump into a bunch of comic book recommendations, was there like a first comic when you were a kid that kind of got you into comics, or what was it about the comic genre that excited you when you were a younger reader?
I think probably one of the first comic books that I ever read was actually a Green Lantern comic book. Mm-hmm. And that was actually that was my first superhero love, because it was and probably the primal form of it is just a wish fulfillment. It's you have a magic ring that can do things for you. I got myself into comic books just from, we went to a garage sale and this lady was selling like, here's this giant box of comics.
Oh, it's amazing.
Take this for $1.
Get this off my hands.
And my mom went, here you go. Take this and go read these. And I'm like, okay.
That's fantastic. How about for you guys over there?
For me, it was a cartoon first, and it was the 90s X-Men cartoon, which is amazing to this day.
That's such a good cartoon.
You can still go back and watch it. It's still awesome. I got kind of obsessed with it. I loved that show. I watched it every Saturday morning, and my brother was like, there's comics, you know? And so my brother's 12 years older than me that introduced me, and he hands me some of his X-Men comics, and I'm like, yes! the first comic I really got fell in love with first series was the original Weapon X series that was the origin of Wolverine. Mm-hmm. So it was he wasn't even his full comic yet, but I have that whole series still and I treasure it. It's good stuff.
Do you have a favorite X-Men character?
It's lame to say that I liked Wolverine before Wolverine was cool.
No, that's
but
okay.
I totally did. But I also
one would argue that Wolverine has always been cool, though.
Right. I mean, he is. But I've also been a big fan of some of the more obscure ones, like not Cable, but the dude with the dreads. Why can't I think of his name right now? I do really like Cable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the X-Men. I like most of the X-Men.
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Jim, how about you? Do you remember like kind of the first comic? Or?
So my introduction to comics is pretty similar to Quentin's, except it's DC and not Marvel. So one of my earliest memories of growing up is going to see Batman Returns in the theater. When it came out, I was like 6 years old at the time. And I remember going with my dad, and I just fell in love with Batman immediately. And then growing up, there was the Batman animated series on Saturday mornings that I loved, and Mask of the Phantasm movie, which was all amazing.
So good.
That was good.
So I feel like my introduction was through Batman, and he is one of my picks for today, but he was sort of like my introduction to comic books and like the comic world.
Man, your life would have been forever changed if that movie that you saw to introduce you was like Batman and Robin.
Well, I did see that in the movies.
Well, yeah.
In the theater, and I remember thinking to myself, this is not good.
Oh, I own the Blu-ray,
and I was only
ironically.
Like 10 at the time. Yeah, I do too.
I love it. It's, yeah. So.
Every once in a while, I'll watch it.
Those nipples on that Batman suit.
Not so great.
There are.
Yeah, George Clooney does a lot of wonderful things, but he almost killed
Batman.
He
actually apologized publicly for that movie.
Yep.
He does all the time. He says, he's like, I almost killed Batman. Like, how terrible of a character do you... How awful do you have to do it be as a character to almost destroy, like, one of the most popular comic... Anyway, sorry.
This is not
a George Clooney podcast. All right, okay, so what we're going to do is just kind of ping-pong back and forth. I will say the name of the person who's talking ahead of time, and I'll let you guys throw up some comic recommendations and just kind of see where we go from there. I want to let everyone listening know, as always, every book we talk about will be in our show notes, and they are all available through Overdrive because that was a stipulation I made these guys do. So I'll let you, Kenny, you want to start off first with whatever you want to talk about?
Oh, man. All right, so let's stick with supers since that seems to be kind of the direction that we're at right now.
Sure.
So I'm going to start with probably All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a kid, I really disliked Superman.
I still don't really like Superman all that much.
Same here.
Well, I mean, it's because...
He's kind of lame.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that he's lame. It's just he's difficult to read because he can do everything. And he never really goes up against, like, okay, he goes up against something that, you know, holds him back for, like, maybe one or two issues, and then...
They invent a power for
And then
they
invent, like, he has a new power that he can just, like, randomly go in and do a thing.
Yeah.
The coolest thing about All-Star Superman, it made me fall in love with the character in a completely new and original way. I'm not going to spoil the story for you, but what I'm going to tell you happens within the first couple of pages is essentially Batman. Jim.
We'll get to Batman. It's okay.
Plot twist.
Superman gets too close to the sun, and, you know, Superman gets his powers from the sun. He gets too close. It supercharges him and gives him all of these really cool, weird, new powers, but they're all killing him. And over the course of the 12 issues that this comic book, you know, runs, he's slowly losing every single one of those powers, and he's slowly becoming less Superman and more Clark Kent. And the really, really interesting thing about it is that even though he's losing all of these powers, and each one of the tribulations that he goes up against is more and more dire and more, you know, big world-destroying type things, he's still managing to be Superman. Even though, like in the last issue, the only thing he has left is flight. He can fly. That's it. No super strength, nothing. Yep. And he's still managing to be Superman. And that's, to me, very inspirational. It's like you don't have to have all of these weird, fantastic powers to really be Superman. You can just be a good person.
It was sort of like, I feel like so many comics nowadays, like especially in Marvel and DC, they sort of like break down their characters like to their, you know, base level, and All-Star Superman was like the first one to do something like that. And so I feel like at the time it was very much a trendsetter. I just read it myself earlier this year for the first time, and I loved it, and I felt the same way about Superman that you do.
Now I have to read that.
It's really good.
I've got the issues right here. You can
They're literally in front of him. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to love this entire conversation.
Like, I don't know. I have a weird thing about Superman because I tried reading Red Sun, and I couldn't get it at all. And that's, like, always been considered one of, like, the best Superman stories ever.
I think that that's a really – that's just a difficult place to jump in at because it kind of requires you to have – pre-existing knowledge of like stuff that happened to Superman before this, and then there, and then it's like, okay, here's this Elseworld story where instead of him crash landing in Kansas, he crash lands in Soviet Russia.
Yeah,
It's just, I don't know. It was weird, and I got like halfway through it, and I was like, I can't do this. This is not good at all. So
sounds very similar to the conversation we had before we started recording about me trying to jump into season two of The Flash while my wife was watching. All right, Quentin, you want to throw one out there?
Yeah, but I do want to follow up a little bit on the Superman thing and to say that my favorite Superman story is the one where Batman kicks his butt.
So like four or five times.
Yeah, four or five times.
Pretty much all of those.
Are you thinking specifically about the Frank Miller Batman?
Yeah, the Frank Miller one.
Which we do have. We do have on Overdrive. If you haven't read that one, that is a really, really good one.
It's pretty awesome.
Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, Dark Knight Returns. And Frank Miller just came out with a new one.
Which we have.
Which we have.
Yes.
It's Dark Knight Volume 3. I think it's called
Strikes Again, I think?
Or I think it's called The Master Race.
Master Race.
Master Race, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't read that yet.
I haven't read it yet either, but I heard
it's not only do we have it on Overdrive, but they did a... like a television commercial. I think it was on AMC for a while, and then they gave us that commercial, so it's actually
nice.
Like Mark, if you're a librarian listening, it's in Marketplace, and we did a blog about it, and
yeah, awesome. I remember it was such a big deal because it's like the commercial ran, and it's like it's now available on Overdrive, and it was actually on the commercial. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty excellent.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, so unlike Kenny, I'm not going to be nice and stick with the current direction. And I'm going to talk about the comic I'm reading right now, which is I'm finally sitting down to read Saga, which is another one we have.
Man.
And so far, it's freaking awesome. The artwork's great. Even the opening scene was more visceral and emotional than a lot of comics ever get.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of known for some of its more controversial stuff, like the whole breastfeeding on the cover thing, and that's not the only reason to pick it up. It's such a truly good comic, and I think I'm sitting in a room full of people that have read the whole thing already.
Yes.
I worship at the altar of Brian K. Vaughan, so
yeah, me too.
yeah so it's so far I can't say enough good things about it. Yep. I'm not very far yet, but it's very, very good so far.
You were talking about the controversy with the cover. It actually was, I don't remember which year, but it was one of the most, you know, challenged books in the library.
Yeah. Yeah.
Solely because of the cover.
Right.
And the deluxe edition that collects the first 18 issues is even more, like, it's just the kid's face, like, laying there, and it looks like a planet he's laying on, but it's not.
It's not.
Like I said, don't pick it up for the cover. Pick it up for the story. It's worth it. And I think the cover is really there to say this is a comic book that's going to go outside the norm of comic books, and we want you to be comfortable with that up front, or maybe uncomfortable with that up front, and be prepared. Yeah. And it's good. So
who does the art again?
Fiona Staples.
Okay.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, yeah,
it's good stuff.
Jim.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the superhero bit really quick. Sorry, Quentin.
That's okay.
You don't have to apologize. We're going to bounce all around. <today.
laughs> It's a true story.
But it's my only superhero pick, and it is Batman. So basically anything Batman is good. That's just my blanket recommendation. But if I had to pick one Batman story, it would be The Long Halloween, which I love gangster movies. So Godfather, Goodfellas, Departed, all those kind of movies. The Long Halloween is basically a gangster story, but with Batman characters. It was a huge inspiration for The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. which is the greatest Batman movie ever made. it is basically about how there are murders of gangsters in Gotham City, and Batman has to try and figure out who is doing the murders. And obviously it's also a Two-Face origin story, which I think Two-Face is the best Batman villain that there is, not the Joker. That's just my personal opinion. I know.
Just kind of blow past that hot take.
Yeah.
I've always been weirdly partial to the Riddler myself.
Yeah, I'm a
That's
Riddler
fine,
guy.
But
yeah. Especially the darker turn on him recently.
Yeah. I just think, like, Harvey Dent turning into Two-Face, that's such a fascinating, like, origin. And I think The Long Halloween does a really great job of showing it and kind of slow building to it once it finally happens. And I think The Dark Knight did a really good job of bringing it up as well.
This isn't recency bias against Jared Leto, is it? This not liking the Joker?
No, it's not. Okay, I was like, because, I mean, like, to be perfectly honest, Heath Ledger did a terrific job in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. And Jared Leto did not. Well, exactly. From my opinion.
Exactly. No, I mean, that's a safe opinion. That now. He was atrocious.
When you start the Joker by having damage tattooed on his forehead, you're not
that's
going
not
in the right
great,
direction.
Or, no. Yeah, that doesn't.
Yeah, that's
well,
not. No.
Also, that whole movie kind of sucked. But
yeah.
We
well,
get
yeah,
it.
Exactly. That just
that doesn't help.
We could have a whole other podcast.
Yeah, we
just
could.
On
we could
good
have
a, and bad.
Yeah,
comic
we'll
book
do, we'll
movies.
Record a second, like a we'll do like a B side of this one, just bashing Suicide Squad after that.
Right.
I can talk for an hour about how bad that movie is.
Yeah,
no problem.
That's fair. Yeah.
turn this into like how did this get made?
But if not The Long Halloween, then Dark Knight Returns is amazing. Year one. Night of the Owls for something a little bit more recent.
No, that
is
was
really
a good one
great.
Too. Yeah.
But I didn't like it once it went past Death of the Family. I thought Endgame was really bad and just really confusing, even though I love Scott Snyder and I think he's amazing. But yeah, that would Batman. Anything Batman.
Batman.
Kenny, you can take us any place you want to go.
Well, Quentin brought up a Brian K. Vaughan with Saga, so I'm going to bounce back to another Brian K. Vaughan, also available from Image 2. It's called Paper Girls. It's currently still ongoing. I'm caught up all the way up to volume 3, and this is a ridiculously good comic book. Yes. It's not only awesome in that it's set in our hometown of Cleveland, but the writing on it is really good. The art on it is awesome. It's art featured by Cliff Chiang, who did the New 52 Wonder Woman stuff. So lots of like plain colors, dark lines, really, really cool stuff. And it's a time travel story, kind of.
Ooh.
Kind of time travel in the sense that time is fluid and is bouncing all over the place. And it doesn't really matter. But these four girls are just bouncing around, stuck in the middle of this weird time war type thing. And it's really I don't know how else to describe it other than I can't even sit here and try to explain what the story is like because it really requires you to sit down and like dedicate your whole brain to it to really understand.
Yeah, it's one of those comic books. Okay.
Yeah, like I remember reading the first volume for the first time because I picked it up on a whim just because I like the art and I'm Brian K. Vaughan.
Sure.
I have to have it. I remember finishing it and I went, the first thing I thought of was, what just happened? And I need to get number two.
See, I have a problem with like issues that are still ongoing. So like Paper Girls and Saga, they're still being written. Like I feel like if I get really into it, then I'm suddenly going to speed read it. And then I have to wait a whole nother year before the next trade volume comes out. And I'm going to forget everything. By
that's why I've put off Saga for so long.
Yeah.
Now there's so many issues that I can.
I think they're up until
Adam is like laughing away from the mic.
I'm chuckling away from the mic because our coworker Christina, who's on frequently.
Yes.
It feels the exact same way, but she talks about YA novels. If they're going to be like a trilogy, she won't read them until all of them are out.
That makes sense, man.
I'm just laughing because it's kind of the same thing. But
I feel like comics are a little different, though, than like a book because like you could just stop in the middle of a story arc with a trade. I don't know. Maybe that's not the case.
You can,
You know, and I feel like if I get a trade in April and I read all the way through, then I have to wait till like next April to get that next trade.
I'm a strange comic book fan, and I don't really read trade. I wait until there's a graphic novel version where it's a compendium of lots of, you know, a collection or just the graphic novels. I like the long-form comics myself.
Yeah.
Am I going to be the weird person here that still has comic book subscriptions?
Oh, you have a pull list?
Yeah, I have a pull list.
I had one on a pull list recently, but it was like a short one-off thing that I can't remember the name of right now.
We should mention, before we get sidetracked, Paper Girls is coming to Overdrive,
right? So yeah, it's coming probably within the next week. It's definitely going to be there very soon.
Cool. Sweet.
All right, just making sure. Nice. Quentin, unless you're making notes and I can go to gym.
No. There's a couple comics I'd love to talk about that aren't available on Overdrive, and I'm debating on whether or not they're connected enough for me to talk about them. So
okay, put it this way: if it's Marvel, we don't have it.
I know. Don't we have some Guardians of the Galaxy, though?
We have Guardians of the Galaxy, like, children's stuff available publishers like Random House and stuff like
that. Right,
we have Star Wars stuff, too, don't we?
Yes,
we do. Those are the Disney public?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought they were Marvel.
That's okay. Disney
public. Well, I mean, Disney owns Marvel and Lucasfilm, so.
Okay. Right.
But Marvel's still in charge of its own publishing division.
You know, some of the new Star Wars books are actually really good.
They are very good.
Like, really good. The Leia one was awesome.
Yeah.
But the publishing world is crazy intricate, and then also when you put on the layer of comic books in there as well, like it's just It's a web we will not untangle today.
It's a true story.
So. Yes. I can go to Jim if you're
All right, let me look something else up.
Jim, right. drop one on us.
So going off of the whole Brian K. Vaughan shtick that we've got going on right now, I'm going to next.
Shtick.
Yes. I said it. I'm going to recommend Why the Last Man, that was kind of the comic that got me back into reading comic books. I was recommended to read it by Simon in Overdrive. Mm-hmm. He let me borrow his copies of it. And it's another Brian K. Vaughan story. It is about a post-apocalyptic world where every male mammal has died except for one guy named York and his pet monkey named Ampersand.
Yes. That's a very good pet name.
Yeah, that is already excellent.
And so basically it is the two of them traveling the world trying to figure out what exactly happened and trying to survive in a world that is now run by women who most of them want to see him be safe and protect him, but then others want him killed. So it is really, really interesting, and it's just a lot of fun to read. It's obviously dramatic because it's a post-apocalyptic world, but there are some really funny parts in it too that you know, make it really interesting to read. And I think I blew through, I think there's 12 volumes.
I think you're right, yeah.
I think I blew through it in like a month.
Yeah.
So
I want to point something out. Kenny doesn't have a computer in front of him. He just knows this off top. This is incredible.
It's true.
I literally have not stopped reading comics my entire life.
the collective knowledge in this room is making me very, very happy.
So. Yeah, Why the Last Man was my first Brian K. Vaughan book, and man, that was such a good one. I like to say that Why the Last Man was The Walking Dead before The Walking Dead became The Walking Dead.
Agreed.
Really is just like,
I
really wish that they would make Why the Last Man into like a television show or a movie series or something like that too, because it would work so well for it.
I mean, that's on my reading list. I have not hit it yet though.
Oh man, it's really good.
Yeah. I have a weird thing.
I'm
going
to come out of here with like so much of my future time books.
I can already tell you, I'm looking at all the books you guys all have. I can already tell you we're doing more than one of these because I know that we're just going to keep talking for a long time. So
it should be known that I only brought in my trade paperbacks. I could start bringing in my single issues, would just take some time to get through.
Have any of you guys read The Walking Dead?
I haven't. I got
through volume 6.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It didn't stick with me as well as like the other post-apocalyptic stuff.
Yeah.
I enjoy the writing and the artwork and everything. It didn't stick with me.
That's how I feel too. Like I have both of the like huge compendium novels and I've only gotten through like halfway of one.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't strike me. And I was a really big fan of the show for 3 seasons, but then I stopped because I realized that every single episode of the show is 5 minutes of action, 30 minutes of nothing, and then 5 minutes of action.
I can't.
I think it's mostly to do with zombie fatigue. There's so much zombie stuff out there right now that it's become everybody's looking for, okay, what's going to be the next zombie thing? And right now it's Game of Thrones, which also has zombies.
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Okay. Yeah.
they're just icy zombies.
Yeah. Icy zombies. Yeah.
I will say the covers of The Walking Dead the comics, like the actual covers, how they kind of connect.
Yeah,
you know, talking about, like how
if you place them all right next to each other,
it makes like one massive, you know. Kind
it is
like,
really really cool.
That's really cool. Like it makes one huge image, which I enjoy.
I think I heard that he's actually going to write an ending to it soon, or like he's moving towards an ending.
He kept saying, like I remember back when the series was still in like its infancy.
Sure.
He said that he was going to go to issue 100 and then that was going to be it. And then issue 100 came and went. And then essentially it became, I'm going to keep writing it until it stops making me money.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Which,
exactly.
You know, more power to Robert Kirkman, man. I mean, if he has something that's doing a cool thing, do the cool thing.
Whatever makes you happy. So,
I mean, the show is in its 7th season now,
something like that,
which is insane to think.
And it's very quickly catching up to where the comic books are.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
super quickly.
Yeah,
it's. I think he's trying to avoid the current problem with the Game of Thrones in that the show is now past where the books are.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, and I will say that the I thought the comic was pretty well written. But it's zombie fatigue. I just didn't feel like reading about zombies, well written or not.
Same thing with like vampires 5 years ago with all the shows and movies, the same thing. It's like,
exactly.
And if they glitter, I'm not reading it.
All right.
I found something.
I found
something that I've confirmed I'm allowed to talk about.
go for it.
It was a movie a while back, but the comic is actually pretty awesome too. It's RIPD, which is, good fun. It's not like, it's actually surprisingly deep in some areas when it starts to deal with like how we handle the afterlife and judgment in general.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's just good fun. And sometimes you need a good fun comic.
Yes.
Was the movie, is that Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges and Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I think I'm one of the few people that liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was good. I liked it. But I think the comics are actually a little bit better. I started reading those a little while back, and it's good stuff.
For people who aren't familiar, do you want to kind of describe the story of that one?
So the idea behind RIPD is you you die, right? And then you have a chance of getting hired on to like this kind of afterlife police force that goes and deals with rogue agents from either side that are doing bad things in humanity or disrupting the balance. And like in the movie, for example, Ryan Reynolds is a cop that dies and gets hired as a cop. And when you come to Earth, you have kind of your own body. Or you don't have your body, you have somebody else's body. So you don't, to yourself, you appear as yourself, but to everyone else, you appear as someone else, which adds a whole comic layer to it. And it's just good fun. It's been a little while since I've read it, but it's one of the ones that I thought would bring up because it's somewhat obscure, and we do have it.
It is, yeah. That's a good pull.
But, yeah. So if you're looking for something that's good fun and not everybody has read, I recommend it. If you like... It's kind of like a less serious take on Hellboy. There's some parallels there.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
But
I love Hellboy.
I love Hellboy. Hellboy's so good.
Okay, well then I'm gonna switch to what
we're gonna talk about. Oh yes.
You know
ahead,
writing. He's writing more, right?
Uh huh.
Like he said he was done for a while ago, and now he's writing more, and I'm super excited.
Hellboy is one of my favorite comic books that I picked up throughout the year. So I've. Hellboy is definitely on one of the top five recommendations I would make for anybody. Not only because it's a long series and it's going to take you a while to get through. There's also a bunch of like side comics that went off. So, I mean, the story of Hellboy is that, you know, he is a demon from hell who was summoned through and was raised by a very kind professor to now he fights like supernatural threats to humanity alongside the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. Like, there's a period of time throughout the storyline in the comic book where he actually leaves the BPRD and he just goes off on his own adventures. So now that the BPRD has its own separate comic book, which is also very good. And then there's he has a friend and slash partner named Abe Sapien, who also has its own comic book at some point in the future. And there's just such deep history. Like, they make side references to this character called Lobster Johnson, like in the early issues of it. And then like, I don't know, somewhere around like 5-7 years ago, they actually released a couple of Lobster Johnson starring comic books that were really good. it's the cool thing about Hellboy is that it very slowly over the course of its existence has shaped this whole universe that you could just dive into. And it's really, really cool.
What do you think of the movies?
First movie, very good.
Yeah. Yes.
Second movie, awesome, awesome, awesome. Ron Perlman was the best casting choice for him. And I'm really excited about the new movies. So they're rebooting the new Hellboy. Yeah. And David Harbour, who plays as Detective Hopper in Stranger Things, is going to be the new Hellboy. And
he looks awesome.
Yeah, they released a test image of like the makeup, the makeup test.
It looks awesome. So good.
He looks perfect. I looked at it and I was like, did they just get Ron Perlman to come back?
When they were talking about Ron Perlman's not coming back, and everyone was like, oh, there's no way you're going to be able to do any casting close to that. And then they announced the casting, and everyone's like, all right, well, okay, good job.
All right, well, you know, you're still going to mess up the casting choice for Liz and, you know, Abe.
Yeah.
They announced the professor. They announced Professor Broom. I'm pretty sure, didn't they?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I can do some real time searching.
Still freaking out about how good he looked as Hellboy.
He did. The only thing I'm a little iffy about is that Guillermo del Toro did such a great job with like monster design and direction and stuff like that on those original two movies.
Yeah.
I don't remember who the director is going
to
be.
I mean, I feel like Guillermo del Toro was born to direct Hellboy movies.
And Pacific Rim.
Just because of everything else that he does. Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth is really good.
Yeah.
Top I'm five still waiting for ever. Guillermo del Toro to actually do his Lovecraft movie. So he's written a treatment for At the Mountains of Madness.
Yep.
Oh, dude, that'll be mind-bending.
It hasn't been made yet because it's such an unfilmable piece of work.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
But if anybody could do it, it's going to be that guy.
Yes. Right, but he likes... The thing that gets me worried is he is so... I love that Guillermo del Toro does... This is nothing to do with it. This is a comic book adjacent. Yeah. He does practical effects so well.
Oh, man.
That's what worries me about trying to turn that into a movie, because it'd be really tough practically. But right.
Yeah, his monster and creature design are great. Like, he pulled in, I mean, just tying it back into the art style of Hellboy, which Mike Mignola, the guy that writes it, does a lot of the artwork for it anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, John Byrne is listed here as a co-creator, but he mostly did, you know, backup art, inking, stuff like that.
Right.
But he pulled in, like, Guillermo del Toro pulled in a lot of inspiration from the actual creature design that Mike Mignola went with, and then just stepped it up into a practical effects standpoint, and it's amazing to see that kind of stuff come to life, especially when you see some of the artwork in here, and it's like, that's completely unbelievable, but that's what it's supposed to be, because you're looking at a demon.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I heard about the new costume design for Hellboy was people were like, well, it looks so close to what Guillermo del Toro did, and it's like, well, that's because Guillermo del Toro did the smart thing and stayed so true to the actual look of Hellboy. That's
right.
Why.
He didn't just like keep his own interpretation
right,
of it or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. So, all right, we could talk about Hellboy for another 3 hours.
We could. Yeah, we got to move on from that.
I've got another obscure one. If you're game,
go for it.
So, you guys have all heard of Conan, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Conan has a great comic book series, actually, too. But have you heard of Solomon Kane?
No.
So Solomon Kane was actually before Conan. And I'll read the description from the Solomon Kane book by Robert E. Howard, who's the original author of Conan. He was a strange blending of Puritan and Cavalier, with a touch of ancient philosopher and more than a touch of pagan. A hunger in his soul drove him on, an urge to fight right all wrongs, protect all weaker things. Wayward and restless as the wind, he was consistent in only one respect. He was true to his ideals of justice and right. Such was Solomon Kane. So
that's dramatic.
I had to be a little dramatic. Yeah. So he's like he fights, you know, all the sword and sorcery aspects of Conan. Like Solomon Kane was a Puritan, like not quite a demon hunter, but kinda, in that like he killed all these he just fought evil in general, like demons, ghosts, zombies, things like that. And his comics are awesome, and we actually have them. It's another Dark Horse pool. Can you tell I'm a fan of Dark Horse?
Oh, just a little bit.
I'm not allowed
to. Do you
like
Dark Horse?
I'm not allowed to talk about Marvel. So
you're not allowed. It's that we don't have them.
I know. I've fallen back to. Yeah. What?
Jim and I are the DC fans.
We are.
You're outnumbered.
You guys have to read the new Deadpool and Spider-Man series. It's awesome. Anyway, but Solomon Kane is really fun. Just like Conan is, it's Robert E. Howard was kind of a genius for inventing these kind of swashbuckling, for lack of a better term, type tales. So if you're looking for another obscure pool that's good fun, that's inspired a lot of the crap we've talked about today. It's not that it's crap. A lot of the stuff that we've talked about today. I mean, it is DC. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
I like DC too.
All right, I'm out.
This has been fun, Adam.
I legitimately like DC as well.
Kenny and Jim have left the podcast.
It's fun to push buttons sometimes. It's really good. The comics, some of the comics you might want to check out. I started with just straight Solomon Kane 1 and went from there. But there's several to choose from. And I'm trying to pull up the list on Overdrive. There it is. So there's just straight Solomon Kane, but you can pull up... you know what? Just start with Solomon Kane 1.
Yeah.
I take it back. It's not an extensive series, so you could read through the whole thing. It's just fun. It's old. The character's very old, so you can see how it's inspired and shaped a lot of the other stuff you read.
And the whole thing is out, so the completist over there in Jim can finish the whole thing.
I mean, people are still writing some Solomon Kane stuff, but it's not super popular. Yeah. So
The other Conan comic books, are those offered through Dark Horse or Dynamite? Because I know that both of those labels have claim to.
I don't know what the most recent ones are, but I know, like you said, I know both. I think they've been published under both labels.
I know that Red Sonja, which is another Howard character,
yes,
is offered through Dynamite, which, if you like strong female characters, Red Sonja is awesome.
She's quite strong. Nice.
And it's written by Gail Simone, also a very good writer.
Oh, okay.
I'm enjoying all of this. it's great whenever when people just come in. And I just love having conversations with people who are so well-versed in a specific thing. We're just like, so I was talking about this one thing, and then you immediately know what it is. Yeah. Anyway, Jim, you got another one?
I do. So my next pick would be Preacher.
That's on my read list. I just bought one.
It's amazing. So I don't know. For anybody who does not know the story of Preacher, I have a synopsis that...
I'm so excited for you to read a synopsis of Preacher.
Okay.
Please go.
So Preacher is the story of Texas preacher Jesse Custer, who is possessed by a supernatural being named Genesis, which is the offspring of an angel and a demon. Custer, who travels around America searching for God, literally, like literal God.
Literal God.
Who abandoned heaven when Genesis was created. He's joined by his girlfriend Tulip and his best friend Cassidy, who, oh, by the way, is an Irish drinking vampire.
So great.
During the course of their journeys, the three encounter enemies and obstacles both sacred and profane, including the Saint of Killers, an invincible quick drawing, perfect aiming, come lately Angel of Death, answering only to He Who Sits on the Throne, a disfigured suicide attempt survivor turned rock star named Arseface,
yep.
A serial killer called the Reaver Cleaver, The Grail, a secret organization controlling the governments of the world and protecting the bloodline of Jesus, Airstar, who is my favorite character in the series, ostensible all-father of the Grail, a megalomaniac with a penchant of prostitutes who wishes to use Custer for his own ends, several fallen angels, as you do, and Jesse's own redneck family, particularly his nasty Cajun grandmother, her mighty bodyguard Jody, and the animal-loving TC. It is bonkers.
It's so good.
But it is maybe my favorite comic series.
Preacher's so much fun.
Yeah, I just bought volume one of that. I'm pretty excited about it.
This is one that I actually haven't read yet.
What?
You need to go read it. Yeah.
I have everything that I hear about it is like, so I'm a fan of John Constantine character.
That's the next book I was going to bring up.
It's like, okay, it's Constantine like cranked up to 11.
Well, it's like if John Constantine was written by Quentin Tarantino.
Okay, that makes sense.
A really good description. You could have read that as a description.
Okay.
That's actually perfect.
Well, yeah, that's funny because the next comic I was going to bring up is Hellblazer, which is
nice.
The Constantine series. And that's another one I'm actually rereading. And,
nice.
He's good.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Adam, have you watched the show?
We watched the first season.
Okay.
I liked it. Love it as much as I liked the comic series.
See, I haven't watched the show yet because when I heard it was being made at AMC, I just immediately thought to myself, that is not the right network for this show to be on.
I will be honest. They did a better job with the kind of like gory, explicit stuff
really?
Than I was expecting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty, and I'm like, you're talking about the character Arseface.
Yes.
It's very creative the way that the way that he speaks. They have subtitles for him, so even if you can even if you can understand them, they have the subtitles.
Nice.
It's good. It's not as good as I wanted it to be, and if anyone knows, it'll be you guys. In Watchmen, what was his name? The guy
Rorschach?
Yeah, well, but what was the actual guy who played Rorschach?
Jackie Earle Haley
is he's in the first season and he is
really
so good it's that. Upsetting.
Who does he play?
The head of the cattle,
that's right. They brought that storyline in the first season.
Yeah,
even though that happens really late. Which I thought was strange.
He's so good. It like made me uncomfortable, which is
okay.
What you expect. So it's worth watching. We don't have cable, so
sure.
We cut cable. We have Sling and Hulu, so I think the second season just came on Hulu, so we're gonna dive in. Very good.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious about it. But you've just depressed me severely because they canceled the freaking Constantine show, even though it was awesome.
Yeah, but he makes appearances every so often.
He does.
Of Tomorrow.
Yeah, he does. But the show was so good. But they're bringing on a cartoon though.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yes, and they're bringing back the same actor to voice him.
Yes,
he was really good.
He was really good. He was like the perfect Constantine. I mean, I actually liked the movie with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Constantine really.
Yeah.
It was something different with the same name, and I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked the movie, but the show was the comic, and it was really, really pretty well done.
It's actually funny that you mentioned the Keanu Reeves one. I read something online recently too that it's a creative, it's a really interesting exercise if you watch the first two John Wick movies and then watch Constantine like right afterwards.
Oh, I'm gonna
and
do
it's,
that.
It becomes a storyline about a guy who, you know, was this excellent, you know, hitman and everything like that, and then became like a supernatural hunter. and it's great too because like the gangster from one of the John Wick movies is Peter Stormare, and then he plays Satan. And
oh my god!
Oh yeah,
and the
yeah, he does.
Movie.
That's right. Oh nice. My gosh, all right. That's awesome.
I know you guys have a bunch more books, so I'm gonna have you guys each do one more, and then we're gonna do a second round of this because. Right, 40 minutes of chatter here.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to have you guys, I'm going to go around one more time and have you guys each do one more, but we're going to do a part two of this. So.
All right.
Kenny, go
awesome.
Ahead.
All right, so, man.
I know, I'm sorry. You have a stack of his gorgeous.
Wait, I have a stack. So I've done one DC, two non-DC, so I'm going to go back to DC because DC is my love. That is my home. So I talked a little earlier about Elsewhere stories in DC Universe. So DC Universe has this, like, constant evolving storyline, and Elseworld stories are just, like, single one-off stories that don't happen in the main DC continuity, but are really cool stories to tell. And my favorite one of these is called Kingdom Come.
Yes.
It's really good. I don't know how else to describe it other than it's amazing.
Yeah.
The writing is really, really great. It's mythological and biblical, and it's just really epic, huge story that's... I mean, some of the main themes in it are, like, youth versus experience and tradition versus, you know, change. Yeah. So essentially what the main crux of the story is that the heroes that we know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, so these are all like Golden Age superheroes, so not like Hal Jordan Green Lantern. We're talking like Alan Scott Green Lantern. The guy with the actual magic lamp.
Right, right.
So going way back, these guys have gotten old, and their children's children, superheroes that have followed them, have now taken their place and are more violent. They cause more collateral damage. They're just, I mean, they're heroes in a traditional sense, but they fight amongst each other. They're just bad heroes. And essentially, like, Wonder Woman comes up to Superman and begs him, like, you need to come back and get this back under control. And that's what the story is them trying to get this under control. All in the meanwhile, we're watching this whole event unfold through the eyes of this mortal spectator who knows that something bad is going to happen very soon. Like, so it's apocalyptic. You know something bad is coming just from the foreshadowing. And this guy, his name is Norman, is an old preacher who is being led through time by the specter, just observing these events, and is being told the entire time, when the time comes, you have to make the judgment. Hmm. So it's like, we as the reader are watching this thing unfold, and then there's this one point right near the end of the comic book where, oh man,
yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It's pretty great, and it takes my breath just even looking at it still. It's like some of the best parts about it are just the artwork. So the artwork is all done by Alex Ross. I mean, if you look at the comic book.
I'm looking at it right now.
Every single one of the panels, every single piece of artwork that you see in here is an actual painting that exists.
Yeah.
He hand-painted everything.
These are incredible.
And it's so good. Like, we were talking earlier about, like, putting comic books together to get this huge thing, and there's, like, the actual trade paperback version will actually fold out so that you can see, like, this scene. Yep.
Wow, that is super
cool. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
If you're listening and follow our Instagram or Twitter, I'll take a picture
of it.
I'll take a picture of this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I can't recommend this one enough. It's just breathtaking. Yeah. It's such a good comic.
I think it's probably the best, like, standalone DC story that there is.
Probably.
I know there's a lot of them out there that are really great, but that one always stands out in my head.
I'm in. Jim, give me your last one for this round.
It's a pretty obvious pick, but Watchmen.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, always regarded as like one of the best. Oh, Quentin is giving me a face of like.
I don't like Watchmen.
Oh.
Get out.
I know. It's a weird comic.
What don't you like about it?
I,
how good it is? Or?
It's yeah, like, do you hate really great written comic books?
It's really well written, and the artwork is good. I don't like its take on humanity. I am too much
But that's kind of the point, though.
Right. I'm too much of a cheesy idealist to enjoy reading things like that.
Okay.
That's just me.
That's fair.
So it's it's
knowing
a really...
you, I can see that.
Yeah, see, Adam gets it.
Well, now I just feel like I'm, you know, this... pessimist.
No.
Humanity I like Watchmen. So. No, thanks a lot, Quinn. I'm gonna go reevaluate my life. Thanks, guys.
For people who don't know the story of Watchmen, can you kind of give us like a quick synopsis?
Sure. So it's set in an alternate 1980s America where there are costume superheroes that are just kind of part of everyday life, and it follows Rorschach, who was played by Jackie Earle Haley in the movie. One of the superheroes in this group is murdered, and he's sort of like investigating the murder while the fact that there is this apocalypse that is sort of like brewing in the background that is going to happen. Like, America won the Vietnam War in this alternate universe. Richard Nixon never had the Watergate scandal come to light because of that, and he is still the president in this 1985 America, and we are like getting closer and closer to a World War III with Russia. Hmm. And so it's basically all of these things kind of like converging together. Not only the fact that Dr. Manhattan is like going off on his own and becoming a rogue agent, and just insanity that is going to happen, like as the comic goes.
Yeah.
I think it's really great, and I think it's very dark and it's very bleak. Obviously, I am really excited about what DC is doing now with like incorporating Watchmen into their storyline. I haven't read anything yet, but I've heard it's been pretty good so far.
I actually haven't read any of the Doomsday Clock stuff yet, because I was disappointed with, so they did a previous event called Before Watchmen, which was just like a bunch of prequel stories.
I didn't read that because I heard it wasn't good at
it
all.
It was not great. The artwork in a lot of them was really awesome. It was just like, that was not those were not stories that needed to be told, because you got everything that you needed from about the characters from the actual core story.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that like background information. I'm one of the people that likes background information, but that was one of those things that was like, that world is fine.
Right, exactly.
Don't mess with that, please.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But yeah, I totally get your point about it being a bad take on humanity, because it is. And
to be clear, it's really well written, and the artwork is fantastic. It's just my personal preference.
I can't argue.
I always go back to... the artwork of Watchmen, because it was so groundbreaking when it was made, because uses a completely different color palette than what most comic books during that time actually used. So most of them used they used the Superman suit colors, because that was what the cheapest colors back in the day.
Right.
What do you think of the movie?
I really like the movie.
I do too.
I think they did the best possible job that they could have done with that work.
Yes. I think if you're going to make a Watchmen movie, which in the first place, I don't really think it's necessary, because I think the comic, it is a movie. It's just on the page. That movie is the best way that it could have been done.
That was probably the best work that Zack Snyder ever did. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Yeah.
Unequivocally.
I mean.
Well, and to be fair, Alan Moore said he hated it, right?
Alan Moore hates everything.
Right, but that's my point.
I think if you ask Alan Moore enough times, he'd be like, I hate Watchmen.
Right, but that's
my
point, is like, everyone who talks about the Watchmen movie, it feels like you have to like frame it around the point. Like, if someone says like, well, what did you think of it? The reason people are saying that is because there was this huge, you know, like, kerfuffle, because Alan Moore was like, well, I didn't like the work.
I don't even think Alan Moore watched that movie.
There's no way he didn't. He hates everything.
I know, because he was really excited about they're going to make one of his greatest books, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. They made that into a movie, and that movie was bad.
That was bad.
Like,
awful.
Awful bad. Writing Hollywood off. And say what you will about Alan Moore, he sticks to his principles, man. He has not seen V for Vendetta, which was a good work.
It was good.
Then he hasn't seen Watchmen, which was also good. So, you know.
Yeah, I think the movie it's good. Like, it's not groundbreaking. Nothing that Zack Snyder is ever going to do is groundbreaking. But, I mean, it's no offense to Zack Snyder. I mean, I think he did a serviceable job with Man of Steel.
No.
Honestly, I enjoy it. I don't think it's awful.
I thought it was terrible. Okay. But anyway, go ahead.
You say he doesn't do groundbreaking stuff, but the first... 300
was good.
You can hate it, but like, if you want to say he doesn't do things that are groundbreaking, like after 300, 58 movies have done slow motion fight scenes because of
that. That's true.
So that,
that's
I'm with Adam on that one. Yeah. So that is technically quote, unquote, point. Groundbreaking.
I mean,
but,
I would give more credit to that. So, I mean, he was a director, but I mean, that's visual effects artist. That's director of photography kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, he like it wasn't a bad movie. I liked 300 too, but a lot of the stuff that was really cool about that movie was the video editing and the camera angles. Yeah. And
I think the way they told the story was actually pretty interesting.
I did like that.
It's not like that wasn't that part wasn't groundbreaking, but it was well done. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
sorry. All right, bring us home, Quentin.
So I'm going to talk about one that we don't have any of the good issues of, but it was kind of instrumental in my upbringing. So we have the Nickelodeon version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics. Which are probably okay. I haven't read them. Nice. But I read the original Eastman and Laird ones.
So good.
And they're awesome. Yeah, like, they're really good. You ever watch the Ninja Turtle movie and not read the comics and think to yourself, why does Leonardo have swords that he doesn't use? Or why? Or the second Ninja Turtle movies, they actually never draw their weapons.
Nope.
That's because parents complained.
Right. Yes. Parents complained that they drew their weapons in the first one, even though they didn't kill anybody with them. And so they didn't even draw their weapons in the second one. But in the comics, not only did they draw their weapons, they killed people with them.
They sure did.
And like Eastman and Laird, when they wrote the comic, it was kind of playful, but also a lot more serious.
Yeah.
And if you want a totally interesting take on the Ninja Turtles, watch that. Read that. It's good fun. I've gone back and read it as an adult recently, and I still had a blast reading it. Like, some of the things in there are obviously ridiculous, but yes. I think they're very clearly meant to be. And it's good fun, and the artwork's pretty cool. It's earlier stuff, and
that was. The originals were black and white because it was. Oh, right. So it was like self-published. They were like, the cheapest way to do it was to just do it black and white,
which was super cool because they bootstrapped the Ninja Turtles by themselves. Eastman and Laird they wrote it like at their kitchen table and
didn't they? They recently released colorized versions of the original.
They did. They did, and the artwork's awesome. I thought it was going to ruin it. No, it's really good.
Well, now, serious question. Okay, because I haven't really read any of the Turtles comics. Does Vanilla Ice make an appearance?
He does not, sadly.
If you'd have made a Turtles in Time reference there, I was going to unplug the recording. I was going to
I sunk so many hours into that game, Turtles in Time.
The game was great.
The movie was terrible.
The movie was awful.
You were talking about them not drawing their weapons in the second movie. Not only do they not draw weapons, they replace them with cold cuts in that first scene.
Yeah.
I could do the first two movies. Yeah.
I remember when I read that movie fact, I'm like, they had to have drawn their weapons at some point. And I went back and watched it. I'm like, they don't draw their weapons.
You got a piece of paper and you're like, tally of the number of times they touch their weapons. And you're like, come on.
Next time I'll use mustard. All right. This was awesome. We are going to do this 100 more times because you guys are fantastic. Thank you, all three of you guys, for joining. I hope you guys all enjoyed all of these recommendations. Clearly, we had a good time. I hope people listening.
We definitely. It seems like I've been in here for 10 minutes. That went fast. Sure.
So, all right. Well, thank you guys, and thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.